sugar.
I'm telling you, if you were on the streets in New York City this week, you would be talking about what the cabbies and the street vendors, lottery ticket booth folks are talking about. Everybody's talking about sugar, government control, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ban on large-sized sweet drinks. A judge struck down the ban. It will be appealed. The conversation goes on. We got this text saying sugar is under attack. I feel that sodium is just as dangerous in excessive quantities, but nobody is telling the public to cut down on consuming it.
What should be banned are certain food additives. Start with sodium nitrite, also aspartame.
Bob there in Brooklyn, who listens to us on WNYC. From Portland, Oregon, the issue is even resonating out there. We got this. Sugar ought to be classified as a drug in the same sense as tobacco, alcohol, firearms, and marijuana. All foods ought to be regulated. The problem shall always be how much and what types. Regulation in moderation, this listener suggests, for the safety and health of the entire planet, not for government or corporate profit. So what's it going to be, folks? Regulation in moderation or sugar in moderation?
You can give your youngsters a lot of pleasure with Kool-Aid.
Wow. You don't care what the kids eat, huh?
You know it's pure and good.
That has high fructose corn syrup in it.
Just add Kool-Aid to water with ice. Add some sugar.
Wow, you know what they say about it?
That it's made from corn, it's natural, and like sugar, it's fine in moderation.
And stir.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and tell us if you think sugar is under attack, if it's getting a bad rap, or if it should be regulated, given the huge business interests who have a stake in keeping us all seeking a sugar fix. Joining us to talk about this is David Ropeek, environmental management instructor at Harvard University, author of the book, How Risky Is It Really? Why Our Fears Don't Always Match the Facts. David, welcome.
Well, hi, John. How are you?
Do you have a sweet tooth? And if so, do you come by it rightly, or did some commercial insist that you...
Oh, I was raised in the 50s and 60s with the sweetest teeth and the biggest cavity-filled mouth that you could possibly imagine.
And look at you now.
Yeah, well, I've lost about 15 or 20 pounds, mostly by giving up, I must say, empty calorie sugar.
All right. So do you think that the campaign against sugar, typified by, say, for instance, the Michael Bloomberg ban on drinks that the judge has just struck down, is appropriate here? Is a targeted, well-thought-out way of getting people healthier?
Well, let me caution that my expertise is not in obesity or sugar per se, although I've done a great deal of reading about it. But in a blog that I wrote at Big Think, where I blog, and in my book, what I write about is getting risk wrong. That is to say, being afraid of the wrong things, more afraid of some things because of their emotional characteristics, and less afraid of other things. And in the sound intro that you had to the piece, it captured exactly what I think the judge found was a problem with Mayor Bloomberg's ban. Your sound piece highlighted high fructose corn syrup. It's very interesting. In the 70s, there was a pushback against sugar, the old kind, the sucrose from cane and beets.
Right.
So the manufacturers replaced it with, drumroll please, high fructose corn syrup in response to public concern about one form of sugar. Well, it turns out that most experts say that fructose and sucrose, when they hit your liver at the rate they hit it, and whether you're eating it or drinking it, and all that sort of stuff, are pretty much equivalent. They're equivalent. So if we have a ban that targets one, whether it's sugar in the 70s or fructose now, that leaves out the other one and leaves us at peril. So psychologically, what's going on now, in my opinion, is there is a targeting of one kind of sugar over another. Witness the fact that the judge himself said that Mayor Bloomberg's ban was arbitrary and capricious, the legal standard for overturning it, in part on the basis of the fact that it did not include other sugary drinks, to wit, orange juice, apple juice, grape juice. Actually, prune juice is the sugariest, according to the USDA. So see the problem, right? So we target one form of sugar and we forget the other one, and it's doing us the same kind of harm in excess. So the problem here is the selective perception of risk may not be the smartest way to make policy.
Prune juice is the sweetest.
Well, I looked up the USDA's data, 100 what sugar content per 100 grams, and like Coca-Cola has 10.6, raw orange juice has 10.4. I think prune juice was 16 something.
No kidding.
Apple juice is above Coca-Cola, yeah.
Well, there must be something else in prune juice that keeps people from being addicted to it, because I've never seen any prune juice addicts.
Well, it's not the addiction so much. The argument against sugar is that's all you get, right? So when you drink prune juice, all the other things that the prunes do to you are the grapes.
Yes,
or
we don't need to discuss that. But yeah. David, isn't there an issue though here? I mean, culturally speaking, you know, mother says eat your vegetables. You know, get a balanced diet. These are cultural norms that we try to inject into parenting or, you know, learning about nutrition in school, those sorts of things. Is it really that much of an overstep to have the government take those messages and try to impose them in some sort of rational policy?
Well, the larger government question is a complicated one, but it boils down to this. When do your behavior and my behavior threaten other people or cost them money? And when that happens, and I'm not arguing it does or doesn't in the case of sugar or salt or food additives. But when that happens, let's take drunk driving as a real good example, right? There's people taking a risk and putting other people at risk. That's what we have government for, to protect us from things we can't protect ourselves from. Now, there's a very open scientific question as to whether that's the case with sugar, because there are an awful lot of other things that go into obesity, behavior, genes, just availability of food that is new in the developed world in the last 100 years.
But if there was an epidemic of some disease, government would quarantine people to prevent the spread.
That's
Can you
right.
say that about diabetes?
Sure. So at some point, should the science become far more conclusive than it already is, there are hints of all of these things. Society would have to weigh whether the behavior of some is putting the greater society at either physical or economic risk and act. And there's plenty of examples of just government doing that all the time.
Well, that's certainly the conversation going on here in New York and around the country. David Ropeik, thanks so much.
Enjoy your Coca-Cola.
He's the author of How Risky Is It Really? Why Our Fears Don't Always Match the Facts. Do you think sugar is under attack? Sugar, salt, and fat, Satan's trio, says some listener eater in Detroit. From New York, we got a text, I think all foods should be regulated, and we can start with portion sizes. Our obesity problem is real, and something needs to be done. That could be Mayor Bloomberg there texting us. From Grand Prairie, Texas, I don't agree with any food being regulated, no matter how junky or healthy it may be. We need each person to make their own choices regarding what we eat or drink, and we will reap the benefits or suffer the consequences accordingly. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. What foods should be regulated, if at all? What's sweeter than sugar? The music at the South by Southwest Festival. That's right, they still do music at the festival in Austin, Texas. Coming up, our friends at KUT Austin take us to the edge. New bands, new trends. Get ready to download, folks.